Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
My memory is when something was is based on sporting events. Oh, how do you know that was 2009? Oh, that was the year Ireland won the Grand Slam. It's like, oh, weird.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here, and I am joined by the one and only Captain Karen Duggan to discuss all the WSL action that happened over the weekend. We also have a very special guest in Rachel Sullivan from Girls on the Ball joining us a little bit later on. But for now, it's just us two, Karen, sitting around, chilling, shooting the breeze.
I know. We're still feeling a little bit lonely without Emma. I'm coming on the podcast expecting to be, you know, in some way slagged or abused, but it's pleasantly
it's
quiet.
It's not the same.
Pleasantly quiet.
Yeah, it's just not the same. Weird. And she's everywhere. So, you know,
everywhere, yeah.
She may have come back to us very soon.
Yeah, we're getting her fixed. It's great to hear her on the co-coms on Sky. She's fantastic at it. So repping us there, which is great.
Yeah, she really knows her stuff. But you didn't have too much time over the weekend to chill, even though that it was a breaking event for the league. It was the All-Ireland Cup. Thoughts, feelings, bit of a difficult result for you guys?
Yeah, really, really disappointing again. It's just one of those things where you can't really pinpoint what's going wrong, but not enough things are going right. So we drew 2-2, and we went 1-0 up. And we had a good lot of possession. We had the lion's share, but we weren't creating maybe clear-cut chances, and we're maybe lacking a little bit of a killer instinct at the moment. So we allowed them back into the game. Just a kind of a sloppy goal. They got their confidence up. Then we gave away a penalty. And to be fair, we fought back, which is great to see, but it's one of those things where we shouldn't be putting ourselves in those positions. So I think the overriding feeling at the end of the game was disappointment, because we would have liked to have seen a good bounce back, obviously, after the disappointment of losing the league game to Shelburne. You know, there are our rivals over the years, and, you know, I was largely positive after that loss because we played well, but at the end of the day, it was still a loss to your main rivals. So you want to see a good bounce effect, and we didn't quite manage that. So it's just work to be done. Again, I think we are used to having such high standards from last season, and when we sit down and be realistic about it, we were doing very, very well last year to be where we were, and maybe it's catching up on us a little bit. I hope not, but yeah, it remains to be seen. Another step up now again at the weekend against Wexford to look forward to, so maybe this week the bounce will come, hopefully.
It just doesn't stop. Well, I feel like it sounds like you maybe just need that one result to kind of buoy you and give you the confidence. And then hopefully you'll be able to use that as not a stick to beat yourselves with, but something that will actually drive you on and say, like, okay, yes, it's a different season to last year, and maybe we are feeling not as fresh as we were, but we still have the quality.
Freshness is certainly a factor, because a lot of people will use the All-Ireland League to try new things and bring in new players and try new systems. But because of the situation we're in terms of injuries and the players that we're missing, we don't really have that option either. So it's kind of like, okay, we should be doing well because this is the team that we have at the moment. This is what we have to drive on with. But at the same time, we don't have that same freshness that other teams can have at the moment. But everyone goes through these sticky patches. But look, it was a different challenge to play against a team like Linfield. They were physical, you know, so again, we learned things about ourselves in that regard. Shelburne were more of a, you know, ball playing team than Linfield were, so it was a different challenge, and you learn things from these kind of games as well. I think we know that we need to be a little bit more robust now, we need to be a bit stronger, and not let ourselves get bullied, because we've got Wexford and then Athlone coming up, traditionally very strong physical teams. So yeah, start back on the training pitch shortly after this podcast and tear into each other.
Torture training session.
Something like that.
Well, Karen, I may actually need your motivation in the coming months because I have been coerced into signing up for the Dublin Mini Marathon. I have not run since I played football when I was 18, and even then,
You're
I
only
don't
a
really
pup.
play
That was
hard.
only about 20 minutes ago. You're grand. Fine,
It's not nearly like 10 years or anything. It's fine.
fine.
So yeah, I may be coming to you for a source of motivation over the next few months, and maybe I'll get to start complaining about my joints and my knees and other painful parts of my body as well to actually contribute some sport to this conversation.
No, that's great. That's great things to sign up for. Like, those kind of things do give you motivation when you actually have something to aim for. So I look forward to welcoming you to the Creaking Joints Club.
Thank you. So
It's
kind,
noisy
so
over here.
kind.
It's very, very noisy.
That's good. As long as there's like a pint or something at the end of it as well, I think I'll manage
There's
it.
always a pint at the end of it. Don't worry.
Some people who we are hoping definitely will not have creaking joints this week is the Ireland squad, as the team is being announced on, well, the team, the entire squad itself is being announced on Thursday, and that's happening at the Sky headquarters. So they're making the most of all the noise around the new deal for the men's side, which actually I think involves as well some more money going towards the women's side too. So it's good to see that happening, and for the Sky to be supporting Irish football across both codes. But two big games. First, we travel to France next Friday, and then we have England at home on the Tuesday. Are we feeling any more confident now that the games are impending?
No, but it like the girls seem to be. We don't have any, as far as we know, any fresh injury concerns to be worried about. I think just on the Sky deal as well, I think it's a great reflection on the girls and what the girls have done for the reputation of the FAI that Sky have now wanted to cross over into the men's game. You know, they were just in for the women, and because of the progress the women have made, what they've done to kind of repair relations in terms of like goodwill towards the FAI and goodwill towards Irish football at an international level. That's huge. And it's great to have a massive sponsor like Sky on board, because the more the men's game grows, it does filter down into the women. So to have that, that's brilliant. But yeah, just on the games, I guess, I mean, the feeling is still the same. It's if we get anything from any of the games, it's going to be an amazing result. I think possibly it's good that the first game is away, so that it's not just straight into a game in the Aviva at that level, which is going to be higher than anything we've experienced for a long time. So we have the France game. Hopefully we come through that unscathed, but it gives us, you know, a good gauge of what the level that they need to get to, and then how they're going to approach that England game in front of that, what we're hoping is a record crowd. And yeah, hopefully I'm excited to see the squad as well. Because, you know, we like to see surprises, but I don't know where they would come from at this point. I think that the last squad could be pretty similar to what we see announced in the next one.
We said this before, the random players like Marissa Shiva or some of the Australian ones popped up, and we were like, oh, we didn't know you guys were coming. So you never
Yeah.
know.
Maybe we'll do a stakeout at the passport office for the next week or so, just in case, so that we can break it there first. But I can't see anything. We haven't heard any rumblings. I don't know. Maybe you've your ears to the ground elsewhere, but I haven't heard of anything else coming through. But there is a bigger pool there to select from than we've had before, which is good. I'd love to know that Sinead Farrelly might be coming back into the fold, or people like that were narrowly missing out the last time.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen if there's been much of an update on her injury status. I know Heather Payne played at the weekend, which was good. She missed the weekend before with the small injury. It had sounded like she would be back for the game, but you're just always worried that someone will tweak something else or something will go awry that we don't want to see. It was great to see as well. Obviously, it wasn't this weekend, but the weekend before, Leanne Kiernan getting on the score sheet. That's really important for us going into these games too, that we have people in those forward positions who are having goal luck
Confidence.
with their
Confidence is going to
goal.
be everything as well going into this, because, you know, you go in and you're already down in your boots, and then possibly come up tough result against France. It could knock you a bit. But we've got enough players playing at a high enough level doing well for their clubs now that hopefully everyone's coming in full of confidence. And even if hopefully there's representation from the Women's National League, you know, we're in season now, whereas the previous campaign we weren't. So it was maybe the girls around here didn't have their hand up as much previously. So again, it gives Eileen a bit of a headache, which is a good thing.
Do you think there's anyone there that might cut through that we haven't seen before? Or do you think it's going to be similar names like Erin that we've seen before?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if there was anyone broke through right now. I guess it's good that everyone's in season, but it's too early in the season for there to really be, I guess, a breakout star from the league so far. So, yeah, I think I would be a little bit surprised if someone broke through from the league, given that we do have a lot of people back now from injury. That it's good to see Louise Quinn getting more game time again. So maybe that gives us more options at the back as well of how... whether we'll do the three or the four, or who the personnel will be in there, because we did see it made a difference when she came on in the last friendly against Wales.
Mm. I'm just looking here from March 24th, Jonathan Tannenwald, who's a reporter over in Philadelphia, saying that Sinead Farrelly is out for the game today, this week. So
resting. She's resting, right?
She's resting.
She's resting for the long journey. It's fine.
I don't think there's been any confirmation from them how long she's going to be out of. So we shall see. We never know. She might turn up next week. She really wants to play in that green jersey again and is doing everything she can to come into it. We have a little bit of concern over the fact Katie McCabe may be flying to Australia mere days before we have to play another one of our big matches.
Yeah, when Arsenal announced this friendly over in Australia, I think it raised a lot of eyebrows. A lot of the top players, not just Katie, have come out and said that the schedule is an issue. You know, there's an international camp after the season is over. You know, it puts pressure on people. They're struggling as it is. They've had a really, really hectic schedule since the World Cup up to this point. And to add that level of travel in between, you know, Arsenal are still mathematically going for the title. You know, it's going to be an intense run in for them. And then we've got huge internationals again coming up, and it puts a lot of pressure. I would imagine there'll be a lot of tweaks of hamstrings and quads. And I'd personally like to see a lot of players pull out of that if they need to. I know Arsenal have commercial obligations and all that sort of stuff, but player welfare should come first. I hope that the girls were consulted on this and there was an agreement that they would be willing to do this. But it's strange given the amount of chatter that there has been around injuries and schedule and load recently, and just particularly around the injuries. You know, every week we're like, oh my God, I can't believe the amount of injuries that are coming, all these ACLs. And then you're like, yeah, well, load. Add travel into the mix.
Yeah.
Not a great look, I don't think.
Well, as long... No, it's not.
Preseason, I get it, but end of season, not as much.
No, definitely. I think it's going to be so hard because I can't see it in a way where there are so many top name international players on that Arsenal team. Like, how does it look if there's one or two that get to
Realistically, yeah, they will travel. It's their job. At the end of the day, Arsenal are their employers and you can't really just say no to that. I just think it's bad timing. And if the scheduling could have happened as a pre-season activity as opposed to a post-season activity when the girls do need a rest before international camp, when you have pretty much everyone in your squad is an international, it seems like a strange one.
It's an irony in it as well, considering how hard they fought against players being released to clubs or players being released to international sides early before the World Cup. And then same thing for this international window that's coming up during the summer, that some of the, I think particularly England, wanted to bring players in a day or two earlier and the clubs were really against it. So stuff like this kind of makes you see why they're possibly very against it. But it'll remain to be seen. That's not for this international window. It'll be after the end of the season. So it'll be a while before we see any more update on that, unless Arsenal make a massive U-turn. But I highly doubt that because I think they've already sold a whole bunch of tickets. On tickets as well, I had a couple of people messaging me over the weekend saying that they were trying to buy single tickets for the either Sweden or the England game, but they're being tied together in the same way that the men's ones are. Just to say that we've seen with the men's game. So you couldn't buy single tickets for the games prior to Saturday's game, but once that game was over, you could get tickets. So potentially, I imagine it's probably going to be a case that where after the England game, you'll be able to buy tickets then just for the Sweden game in case people are worried about not being able to travel for both. Obviously, it'd be great if people can make both, but there's also, I understand that one game is on a Tuesday, the other is on like a Friday or a Saturday, I think. So very, very different situations for people. That is all that we have for now. We sadly do not have Emma Carroll for our Team of the Week this week, but we will be joined by Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball very shortly. Now, I am delighted to say that we are joined by the one and only Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball, who has been once again kept very, very busy by the football schedule. I saw some, I'm not sure if it was yourself or Sophie tweeting from your account that the World Cup felt like it was only yesterday, yet somehow we're edging closer to the end of the season. Have you been fit to collapse yet, Rachel? Or are you ready to go again?
I'm carrying on. I just need to keep going until the end of May, and then I can collapse for about 5 days, and then we've got the Champions League final. So don't know how the players are doing it, so I can't complain.
Well, we were just talking about that before you came on, about Arsenal's potential trip to, well, is going ahead, the trip to Australia, and what it means in the context of Kane McCabe and our international window.
Makes loads of sense, doesn't it?
Mm, exactly.
Women are talking about loading, and the next going, by the way, we're also going to go to Australia about 5 days before a qualifier. I don't know if she'll go. I don't know if, and this is the thing, like me and Soap are talking about it, like if they don't bring the bulk of the squad or some of the key players, bit rubbish then to go all the way out to Australia for the Australian fans to be like, oh, it's the Australian players we were going to see playing for the Matildas and, you know, a few others. But yeah, it's not a great look, is it?
Do the Aussies have an international game around that time out that direction as well?
I don't know. I'll have to have a look. But I feel like, I think quite a few of them are saying they're already obviously going to be going that way anyway. So it was fine for them traveling. And then lots of people wanted to point out, well, like the Australian players do it, you know, for camp. And you're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's good. And it doesn't mean that like everyone else should do it then, does it?
And also it's not giving them, because they would normally have those extra days where they're doing match prep to be in camp or else, you know, resting up after a long haul flight. So it technically isn't doing them any favors either, but remains to be seen. As Karen was saying, maybe some tight hamstrings or something might come into play.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about it too much.
She's had a knock. There's an illness.
Cue everyone going into absolute meltdown at the prospect that she might not be available for their games. I don't
and
know.
And then someone will light a candle and she'll be fine.
Yeah. I don't know if the collective consciousness of Irish women's fans can take that level of stress on them ahead of the games. They're already stressful enough, but we'll see how it goes. In terms of games that did happen at the weekend, we might as well start with the Manchester Derby since it was the first one to kick off the weekend. Karen, I can see you smiling already. went much how we said it would?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that United even started as well as they did. And realistically, if United were to have a chance in that game, they needed to hold City out for a lot longer and probably needed to score once. So I understand why Skinner was so aggrieved with the first Man City goal. Obviously, there was an offside in the build-up. And you can say, what if? Because United were a little bit on the ascendancy for a lot of the first period of the game. But also, it felt inevitable that Man City would grow into the game. And I think the match really showed the difference between the two sides, because it wasn't a huge disparity in terms of chances created or possession, but it was how accurate Man City were and how much more purpose they have to their play than Man United. Man United, you're hoping for something to happen, whereas City kind of seem to have a bit more fluidity and a bit more of a style and a plan to their play. And, you know, the link-up play is just better all around. So I think I probably would have predicted 3 or 4 nil. United snuck a goal, an own goal, albeit. But and they only really played with more freedom when they were 3-0 down, which is, again, it's really disappointing. And it shows that there's not, I don't think that there was full belief in the United team that they could go out and beat City at the Etihad.
Well, that belief has been something that we've talked about a lot this season in terms of even just when they're looking at signing players or after the players they'd let go, having that belief in themselves and having that sense of style just doesn't seem to be there. Rachel, a great day for Jess Park, lifelong City fan, came up from the academy. You know, what a way to score your first league goals.
Yeah, the goals, I mean, I know the first one shouldn't have been counted, but like just the kind of maturity and ease at which she plays and kind of bounce through that United midfield, riding tackles, like she was on another level. And she's really risen to the occasion since Jill Ward's injury, you know, asked to play a more central role. And we saw it as well against Chelsea. Like she's not just kind of stepping up in any old game. She's stepping up in big games. So to score a brace at the Etihad was pretty incredible. And yeah, I agree regarding, you know, Mark Skinner being frustrated at that goal being allowed. But like, I almost feel like even if it had been ruled out for offside, they had the ball in the back of the net three times in like 8 minutes. So it was like, it was almost that getting that ball in the goal. Suddenly they were like, okay, actually, we've ridden the storm, the early storm for the we're first kind of 20 odd minutes. Yeah, let's do it again. So I feel like even if it had been ruled out, they probably would have gone again and gotten another one. But yeah, again, agreed, frustrated. It's this kind of same old story, but United coming out, starting games well, creating opportunities, but not good quality opportunities. I would have thought he'd have seen the late change in defence and see, you know, Kennedy coming in late into the back line and would go, that's who we need to target, because there were moments where she was caught out, didn't know whether to go high or to stay back, and she'd kind of get caught in the middle sometimes. And, you know, teams should be able to recognise and capitalise on those moments, and I just didn't really feel like they did. And once that back line settled, you kind of didn't see anything else other than a Man City win.
We were chatting to Jaleef Lardy the other week and we were saying, you know, if Chelsea and City played each other today for the league, who would win in a straight out battle? And it's just become my question du jour for every guest that we have on. But for you, Rachel, what would you think after watching them at the weekend?
If it's based off the weekend, you'd say Man City. But I think after Chelsea lost to Man City and then had that win against them in the cup where they didn't play well, they didn't play great against Everton, still won. They didn't play great yesterday, still won. I think if it was like a on the line for the title, I still think Chelsea would do it.
Mm. They just have that annoying tenacity to be able to get a win even when it's dogged and dirty and you think that they're down and out.
It's the bench as well that they have. Like, and the fact that Emma Hayes is not afraid to go on the 65th minute. Okay, I'm making a quadruple sub here, you know. United could only dream of doing something like that.
And the fact that they can do that despite the fact they've had multiple injuries across their squad as well this season. It's not like it's been a particularly easy run-in for them. We had another derby as well over the weekend. We had the Merseyside derby, which didn't exactly light the world alight, safe to say. Everton 0, Liverpool 0. This was kind of like the Irish derby as well, with the amount of players on both sides. You know, we got to see a bit of Heather Payne, Courtney Brosnan, Rachel.
Didn't have to see too much of Courtney, to be honest.
She kept herself warm.
She did. There was a good save towards the end. So to keep her concentration in a game where really not much is happening, got to give her kudos for that.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I did think this fixture in the past has had a bit of grit to it, and that just wasn't really present on the pitch at the weekend, Rachel.
There wasn't much present on the pitch, to be honest, I think, during that game. It was probably the least exciting fixture of the weekend, which I feel like promised so much and delivered so little. Like, even last Women's Football weekend, same story, Goodison Park, Merseyside derby, and it was a really enthralling 1-1 draw, and it was exciting, and there were big saves, and there were chances. There was a big, much bigger crowd. There was something like 25,000 maybe there last time. There was just under 10, I think, this time around. It just felt flat. And I think the bloody number of injuries, I don't know how many of them were genuine injuries, how many of them were tactical injuries, but like, it was just stop, start. No, neither team could get a rhythm in that first half.
And neither team imposed themselves either. Yeah. Like, the fact that in a derby like that, there was one yellow card, you're kind of like, come on, someone do something just to like kick us into gear here, even if it's a big tackle, because the chances weren't coming. So you needed something else to like get it going.
It's like neither team, both teams were afraid to lose rather than trying to impose themselves and actually get the win. I think for Everton, they're like, you know, we're in dire straits. We've got players playing all sorts of different positions. you know, it's going to be a hard work. Liverpool have come off the back of a good win. Like, you kind of, they almost felt like they were the underdogs. Let's just not go crazy. And then, conversely,
it's
Liverpool,
a better result for them because Liverpool, you know, it's a point and they're ahead of Man United, which is important to them, but they could have gone a real step above them.
Yeah, I would have expected that. And Brian Sorensen has said in the past, like, and Matt Beard, that when the derby comes around, like, form goes out the window. And I feel like it quite literally.
That's true. Everyone's form went out the window.
Yes. It was not great. Everton were better in the second half. I thought Heather Payne was very, very good in the second half. She came alive in the second half. Piemonte, I thought, was a great addition. Probably would have brought her on earlier. I think Mifa, he got lucky a couple of times. Some of the fouls she put in on her that she seemed to get away with. There was a very elongated foul.
There's a skill in that, though, as well. I appreciate that.
Is it her skill or is it the lack of referee? I don't know. But there was a couple of missed things. but yeah, I think
Karen is president of the Mifa.
I won't say anything bad. But I think Brian said afterwards, he was like, if you told me beforehand we'd get a draw, we would have taken it. But then he said equally, though, after the second half, he kind of a little frustrated they didn't get a goal. So I think both managers are okay with it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm. What is there anything that can be done to put that sort of grit into these derbies? Because a lot of the time you'll see it would say the Manchester Derby or even Arsenal Spurs, not so much in recent times, but because they haven't been madly competitive, you know, they've been quite one-sided at times. It feels like there isn't the same, I don't know, risk or something going into them. Whereas this one, the teams are fairly evenly matched season to season, or like one might be slightly above the other, but you kind of would expect them to go at each other a little bit more.
Yeah, I probably would have expected it more from the Merseyside derby. I think it's growing in the other derbies. I think Arsenal-Tottenham has become quite a feisty derby. So is Chelsea-Arsenal, although that wasn't really on display the last time they played. But there tends to be, you know, you can think of some of the key battles. You know Aaron Cuthbert's going to go up against someone, or Katie McCabe is obviously going to go up against anyone. But, you know that there's going to be those key battles around the pitch, and we're starting to see more of that in those derbies. Would have maybe expected that a little bit more. But then at the same time, I'm probably looking at Everton going, they're just trying to focus on the bloody position that they're not used to playing in. They can't be thinking about, like, getting feisty with someone where they're trying to be like Rory Galli's, like, no, I'm in defence, I have to stay back deep, like, and not go up the pitch. So maybe there's an element of that in it.
Yeah, there's definitely probably a potential for that. You mentioned refereeing there, and that was very much on the cards over the weekend. Rhian Skinner in particular, not very happy after Chelsea's 2-0 win there. You have to say, like, sometimes referees give off about refereeing. Mark Skinner in particular annoys me a little bit at some of the complaints that he makes, but a lot of the stuff she said was very fair. It should have been a call for them, and also the fact that she was calling for better education and more full-time refereeing rather than just laying all the blame at the feet of the ref.
Yeah, I can understand it. I've been to quite a few of their games. You know, she listed a number of games where they've had issues. You know, Liverpool, 2 goals shouldn't have counted. Spurs, same thing. You know, and yeah, everything can't hang on one decision. But if you look across the season and think, God, there's like 3 or 4 games there where we potentially could have gotten a draw, a point or 3 points out of it, didn't. That can have an impact on the table. So I think
when you step back and think about it, like, that takes West Ham out of that relegation battle they were in for a while. And when you look at some of the football they were playing against Chelsea, even, you're like, they were too good to be down where they are. They are too good to be where they are. And if those decisions had gone the other way, would we have seen them up in and around competing around where Liverpool are? Potentially.
This is it. Yeah. And like, I've seen West Ham quite a bit this season, and I'd kind of been singing their praises a little bit from the get-go, and everyone was telling me, Rhian Skinner is not doing a good job. They don't have a good enough style. Look where they are on the table. I'm like, no, look at what they're doing on the pitch. And look, they only have themselves to blame. The chances they had and didn't put away, you're like, for God's sake. But equally, when the goal that was disallowed would have come in the game, they had a number of chances after that. And I feel like had they scored that, the tails would have been up. They'd be like, we've got one back against Chelsea, we can get another. Instead, having that goal disallowed meant every opportunity, there was so much more riding on it, and they just snatched at it. And yeah, I can understand their frustrations.
And as you said earlier, another not exactly clean win for Chelsea, but all that they needed to get themselves over the line and keep that title race in their own hands.
The first goal, you have to say, was an excellent goal as well. The breakaway, having just had a scare, to come back up the pitch, and, you know, Lauren James, obviously, she let someone else score for once, which was nice of her.
It was a lovely goal, especially Agabiba Jones as well. She hasn't been getting loads of minutes, but her goals to minutes ratio must be ridiculous.
She's about eight or something.
She's only had about 8 minutes or something. Like she nearly scores every time she comes on.
Yeah.
I've seen that as a bit of a trend with some of the Chelsea players. You look at someone like Macario who comes on and only gets a couple of minutes in her first
goal. Goal, own goal, whatever. She'll score them.
Yeah. The other place that we have to look to for ridiculous decisions and just generally a ridiculous goal is Arsenal, Aston Villa, Stina Blackstenius, providing us with possibly the most mind-blowing moments of the season. I love the way you both did the exact same thing as I mentioned, that you both started shaking your head and like putting your head in your hands. I don't even know what to say about this. I didn't get to watch this game live. I watched back the highlights and I saw the goal on Twitter before I watched the game and I was like, surely not. Surely this is not
how... Stina Ballerina Blackstenius. She had the pirouette against Brighton, I think it was. Still scored. You know, I mean, fair play to her for not stopping, for not kind of pulling back, for not like, and it was the same when she missed it against Brighton and spun around and went again. Like, the Aston Villa players were like, oh, she's offside, so then slowed down. Then they were like, oh, she'll handle it, so we won't bother defending. Like, at least she's got her head in the game enough to be like, whatever happens, whatever I do, I'm going to get the ball in the back of the net, whatever happens. And it is a bit shambolic when we'd had so many decisions we talked about this weekend to then have someone literally be offside, fall on the ball, handle it, get up, nutmeg three people and score a goal. Like, it's, yeah, a bit calamitous, but I don't think Arsenal cared.
If even one of those things happened, you'd say it was ridiculous. And the fact there were so many of them again. But Karen, like, it was a difficult game for Arsenal. Once again, we saw them struggling with that low block, especially in the first half, and then they managed to get themselves out of it in the second half and find their scoring boots. But for a long time, I was watching this thinking, I don't know if this is going to go well.
Yeah, and like, I wouldn't even say Villa were particularly good. It was just that Arsenal, again, didn't have a huge amount of bite. They weren't moving the ball quickly enough or with enough purpose in the first half. The press, which when they get it right can be so scary for a team to play against, didn't have the same energy. And honestly, it wasn't until really Russo dropped into the 10 and Blackstenius went up front that we started seeing a bit more energy and a bit more directness to the play, getting the balls in the box, just putting that low block under a lot of pressure. And then the mistakes started to come, which were inevitable because there was no way that Aston Villa could hold out for that long. Well, they probably could have in the way Arsenal played in the first half, but they came with more energy in the second half. But yeah, in the first half, it was almost like they were resigned to the fact that they were no longer in the title race. But then I guess it was a game that they were so on top of that they came out with the win in the end. And yeah, I mean, it's not much else to say about it, really. Villa not great, but gave them a scare.
You would have to think, though, with Arsenal, that there should be some motivation there in that... Like, obviously, Liverpool did draw at the weekend, so it didn't really come to pass. But with the way results have gone this season, you know, it could very easily be a couple of bad results and all of a sudden Liverpool are breathing down their necks for that Champions League spot.
Yeah, there's an element to that. I agree. There was a lack of kind of urgency and almost desire in some elements. But then there was also like a lack of confidence, I think, as well, with some players, which I'm not really used to. You're not really used to seeing with Arsenal. But like players like Caitlin Ford, or, you know, that there's like almost a fear of shooting or a fear of missing. Like, there was a Caitlin Ford one where ball was laid out to her, and, you know, clear opportunity to shoot, and she passed it back to the top of the box. You know, and there's things like that where just their decision-making isn't as good as it has been. And I don't think they're great at maybe problem solving on the pitch a little bit, you know. And
decision making even is coming from the back. If you look at the goal they conceded, where, you know, Ruben Moy didn't follow the player, but equally then Williamson didn't mark the player in the box, and the exact same things were happening last week, and it's really uncharacteristic of them. And it's almost like they look shaky at the back, you know, and that can kind of filter its way through the team a little bit. I was really surprised with the goal they conceded and how easy it was to stop, and the fact that they didn't. It's like, take responsibility, take the runner, Ruben Moy, grand, she didn't. I expect Leah Williamson to know that the danger then is the player in the box, you know.
But it was almost as well, though, I thought Carla Ward's kind of game plan was to absorb all of that pressure, and then I think teams just know Arsenal can be scored against. And that's probably something they didn't have in the past, where you'd come up against Arsenal and go, okay, if we get a goal, great. But now I think almost any team can look at them and say, do you know what? We probably can get a goal. There is going to be a mistake at the back there that we can capitalise on if we do it right. And if we can hold out enough, you could potentially get a result. And I think that's now maybe how teams are lining up against Arsenal a little bit more now. There's a bit more of a confidence about other teams when they come in against them. I also would maybe question team selection for this game versus, you know, team selection for the Chelsea game. I actually think the other way around would have been better. Stina would have been better to start to help break down that low block. Russo would have been better than against Chelsea, I think. And then, as you say, once she came on with Russo a bit deeper, it was like a different forward line.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adeval and the general teams in game management is something that we've talked about quite a lot on the podcast. Is something that's just not been particularly to the forefront or anything that you felt like they've been doing well, especially in bigger games. And when it feels like they really need to switch up, they just seem to almost freeze. Which you think against a team like Aston Villa, they should be able to do it a little bit easier. But we got there eventually, which is all I cared about. Two teams actually that didn't have any trouble in finding their scoring boots was Leicester and Brighton. 5 goals there. Katie Robinson, I thought, put in a really, really great performance. But it was one of those chaotic games that you were like, anything could happen. You obviously had Leicester getting that goal in the 84th minute, then Herland jumping up for Brighton and getting theirs in the 85th. In some ways, you'd almost think a 3-3 draw would be a good sign of how this game had gone.
Yeah, this is actually probably the surprise result of the weekend for me, because I don't think Brighton have been great. You know, I was quite excited about them at the beginning of the season. You were starting to see things. You were starting to see ideas take place. You knew it was going to be a journey, but you were starting to see a bit of a style. And I just feel like they've plateaued a bit. And you know, they've become a little bit less creative, because again, maybe it's a team that I always felt like could get a goal in a game, even if they didn't win it. You felt like Turland was going to find, they were going to find her and she'd get a goal at some point during a game. Whereas I think they've struggled a little bit with that service to their players up front. So I wasn't expecting this, particularly against Leicester, who I thought played well against Spurs, and it was quite a tight game last weekend. To then just, I don't know, both teams just threw defending out the window in the second half. Again, some of the goals were bonkers and from mistakes, some of them. That corner, that one that came in from the corner is just like, that was almost Blackstenius-esque. So yeah, it seemed like quite a wild game. And for those goals to come in the second half as well is ridiculous.
It was one of those things.
Good crack.
Karen's just there for the vibes. That's all she really cares about when she's watching these games. It's an important win for them as well in terms of where they are in the table. Like, I remember talking with Emma Byrne about this a couple of months back. I think it must have been before Christmas. And she had been out at the Brighton training just a couple of sessions. And she was kind of saying to them, you know, guys, if you don't pull your socks up here, you're seriously looking at relegation as a possibility. And these games are getting important. We saw them get over those games, but like you were saying, Rachel, they haven't really done anything massively impressive this season so far, despite the setup that they have. And I feel like this is something we say a lot of seasons about Brighton, is that it looks like the potential is there and the want is there, but they just haven't really seemed to be able to hit on it, which is unfortunate for them. And unfortunate for the league too, because we like to have as many competitive teams in there as possible.
I think there is an element, though, of like maybe managing their expectations versus their spend and where that spend is. Like, obviously, they've invested in this great facility. You're not suddenly going to have like a top four team in a season. You need to spend the money on the pitch as well. You need to be bringing in those kind of players if that's the kind of quick progress you want to make. And you shouldn't sack your manager like 3 months into a season. So, like, it's a weird kind of, you look at their ambitions and then you look at some of their decisions and you're like, they don't kind of match, if you know what I mean. So that's what's been frustrating. I think they've had, for all their investment, they don't have a great relationship or a great history with managers. And I think that's something they really need to get right, whoever they end up bringing in.
Definitely. And then finally, we have Tottenham 1, Bristol City 0. When you saw Bethany England scoring after 1 minute, two minutes, you were kind of like, this may not be a good day at the office for Bristol, but they put in a defensive performance. Tottenham also seemed to have left their shooting boots at home, and they had 23 shots, only 7 of those were on target, so it wasn't a great day out for them overall, especially with the amount of possession they had. But it is a loss for Bristol, but they can be relatively happy, Karen, that they managed to hold Tottenham to just one goal.
Yeah, I guess in the greater scheme of things, they can be. But, you know, when they're only getting beaten by one, you're always kind of like, oh, could we have pushed on and could we have maybe nicked it when Spurs obviously weren't at their best? And, you know, Spurs are pushing forward. Could their counter-attack have been a bit more efficient? But they had to soak up a lot of pressure and they didn't get a chance to create anything really. So, Spurs kind of, you know, they're getting the one goals and stuff. I think they're going to need to step up a little bit if they've got ambitions in Wembley. You know, there's big games ahead for them, but maybe this is the start of England starting to feature a bit more for Spurs at the right time for them, when there could potentially be silverware within reach.
It's been a difficult season for Bethany England, Rachel, between the injury and just coming back and finding her form.
Yeah, and I think she probably knew that. And I think, you know, maybe I don't think people were maybe expecting Marco Thomas to come in and dominate quite so quickly. What's been really interesting about Spurs' journey is that it's like they focused on the attacking side of things for the first half of the season. And yeah. I'll never forget, they created something like 17 chances against Chelsea in the first game of the season. It was like, who are these people? This isn't Spurs.
I preferred the first half
to.
Of the season. Yeah. Spurs. It was more fun. Yeah.
Forget the defending. We'll just outscore you. But now they've kind of gone the other direction, I think. And I think that 7-0 loss to Man City, maybe he was a bit like, you know what? Maybe we need to think about defending. And now it's like, now they're so focused on defending. They're doing well defensively. But then it's almost like, and that loss to their creativity. So yeah, hopefully they find it again before the semi-final. But I think, you know, the game is so tight with Leicester. It's quite a tough one to call. And I think Leicester may be a little bit inconsistent sometimes. So it makes it, again, difficult to call. So looking back at Bristol, I think it's the injuries have come at such a rubbish time for them. I think they almost guaranteed a goal in every game they played. And they've kind of lost that now. And I think that is partly down to some of the injuries they're dealing with. And it's a real shame, because that kind of performance that we were seeing earlier on in the season could have really benefited them in games like this, where they're just 1-0. Even the United game, it was like 2 shots on target and 2 goals for United, and one of them came really late.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll look at those games and go, oh, if we'd had the form of the players that we had earlier on in the season, they could have been a different story. So it's a real shame that not only are they already punching up, but they then have to deal with injuries this late in the game is a shame.
Yeah, no, it really is. And everyone who listens to this podcast knows that I have quite a soft spot for Bristol. So I want to see them do well. But unfortunately, it's looking like it may not be their season. But you never know. They could be back very soon. And we could maybe get some change that the likes of Gilly Flaherty wants, of more people coming up into the league rather than losing them so quickly when they've come up. Rachel, I have to ask you a quick question. Feelings heading into the international window? Big game in the Aviva coming up?
Very stressed about it. I'm trying not to think about it, to be honest. I'm excited that it's being held at the Aviva, because we put it in the big stadiums in Ireland, England. I'm really excited about it. I think England fans will travel, so I'm really hoping for some good numbers, a great atmosphere. Less excited about the actual game. That fills me with a huge amount of anxiety, but it's going to be an experience, to say the least. And I've got some friends coming over from here as well, so I'm excited to kind of show them a bit of Dublin and how we can put on a game.
Sounds good. Well, hopefully we will be able to catch up with you when you're over as well, and we can provide you with some solidarity.
Please. Yeah.
You may need it, considering
you know what I'm dealing with over here.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, if you're looking for any of Rachel's stuff, you can get her Girls on the Ball. They're across social media. And as always, you're at basically every game. I wonder when you sleep sometimes. And
I
see the stuff that you and Sophie do. Karen, thank you as always. Have a good training session. Try not to torture yourself too much.
Yeah, unlikely.
The Quigging Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. If you have any thoughts on the podcast today, or if you just want to get in touch with us generally, maybe you want to tell us that you're going to one of the games or some of the games or all the games, you can get us at the Koi Gig Pod on Twitter. And we are always interested in hearing what you have to say. Thank you very much for listening. And we shall see you next week for a bumper week of episodes.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.